Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
By the way, you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1. KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. And back to Warriors in about 20 minutes when O'Donnell Foyle joins us to break down the return of DeMarcus Cousins. But as far as the Patriots thing goes, all that stuff you're just describing, Belichick deserves a ton of credit.
Oh, but she's just incredible.
But Sony Michel not really showing up till January. The pass game suddenly looking like Patriots of years past. What the common denominator here is Tom Brady.
Not Philip Dorsett.
No. And after a season of looking 41 years old, last weekend he looked like Tom Brady.
Oh, he looked great.
And I think maybe the biggest thing that happened here for those of us who went ahead and picked the Pats to lose last weekend.
Did you take them? You took the Chargers?
Yeah.
It's okay.
And I stand by that. Based on what I had seen.
Yeah.
And I think what I didn't consider is that Tom Brady, I'm stealing this from Bill Simmons, but Tom Brady was pulling a Warriors.
Wow.
In that he knows when it matters. He knows that with Bill Belichick coaching, you could almost trot the 95-7 The Game staff out on both sides of the ball during the regular season and win the AFC East.
Yes, I agree.
It's that much of a joke. And they play the Jets and the Dolphins and the Bills twice every year. And Tom Brady just seems to have taken the approach that all I've got to do is get through this healthy.
And I think that 1 week off rejuvenated them as a team. And you give Belichick a week off to scheme against anybody.
He's going to outcoach.
Come on. Yeah. I mean, and he brought up Van Noyes, the linebacker. I mean, anyone could have had that guy in the entire league, and yet they're utilizing him perfectly. It's unreal. It reminds me of when Larry Grant stepped in behind when Patrick Willis got hurt, and you're wow, this Larry Grant, where did he come from? And it's like, well, in the right situation with the right players around him, and if you know what the guy's strengths are, you could plug and play, and the guy sees the heights of heights he's never seen in the NFL. The other guy, McCourty's an absolute stud, and I just...
Both of them.
Oh, God, I loved... And Gilmore. Everybody ripped Belichick for giving Gilmore that money. He went up against Gilmore two times a year in Buffalo every single year. He let Butler walk, and that was a great decision because Butler, by PFF rating, was absolutely awful for Tennessee. He let the other running back go, who was the guy that they, Deion Lewis, they let him go as well. And
also to Tennessee.
Yeah. look at you. But I'm saying both of those moves worked out brilliantly. Now, against the Chiefs, how are they going to take away Kelce this time? Are they going to do the exact same thing? You don't think Andy Reid's going to have some sort of a counter to that? How are they going to slow down Tyreek Hill? Tyreek Hill has destroyed the Patriots. Going back to, remember last year, the first game of the year, Alex Smith, when they just absolutely buzzsawed the New England Patriots that game, and Tyreek Hill was throwing up the peace sign, going 50 yards, you know, on a burst. And then the two running backs filling in for Kareem Hunt, who... I thought this was going to be a bigger loss for them. I really did, because he's a good player.
I think you saw last week, it's not the same without Kareem Hunt. Last week was the one where...
Williams is good, though. He's not great, but he's good.
But it's not the same.
Agreed.
That being said, the thing that impressed... More so than the Pats absolutely running train against a team I picked to beat them, more so than I think anything I saw last weekend, the most surprisingly impressive thing to me was the way Pat Mahomes played in his first playoff game in brutal weather environment against a defense that, look, they're not the Bears, but they had been playing pretty well.
Definitely.
He looked utterly unbothered. Not by the cold, not by the snow.
He's a beast.
I thought at least... And, look, you know, part of it was the Colts laid an egg, and Andrew Luck looked awful.
Yes.
But I picked the Colts to win because, A, they had been playing so well, and I had no faith in the Kansas City defense. And, B, I did expect not a bad performance, but maybe just a little off in a snow game in your first postseason game, in your first year as a starter. I expected just a blip on the radar, and he was almost perfect in that game. And that's why I'm going to make another dumb decision and pick the Chiefs to win this weekend, is because
it's a good pick, though.
If that Colts defense couldn't even, he didn't have the slightest note of bother on him.
No.
If they couldn't even shake him in the slightest, I know Belichick is a tremendous defensive schemer. I know this Pats defense can give you trouble. I got to go with Mahomes.
Yeah, I'm taking Brady. I'm going to stick with Brady. I'm going to roll with Belichick and Brady until they get knocked off. It's he reminds me so much of that playoff pitcher that, like, whether it's Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens, whomever, Bumgarner.
That's a great comparison.
You know,
for
he
Brady.
Just he could look awful at times, and then when push comes to shove, who are you going to bet against? You going to bet against that guy? Because I'm not. And if I need a couple of drives early on in that game, they almost dropped 40. In the first half against the Chargers.
That was truly a beatdown.
Well, yes, and that's another thing about last week's games. I do it every year. I undervalue and completely discredit that week off. That week off, not just the healthiness, the being able to recuperate. It's the being able to sit back and scheme and take that extra couple of days to really dedicate it toward the opponent you're playing. It's And these guys need that rest. And you could see the hitting in that game. Kansas City, by the way, they were laying hat in that game. Laying hat. I want to see, does Gronk have anything left in the pass game? We were talking about his blocking. Does he have anything left? Because I'm watching Kelce. Kelce is just so good. Not that he's better than Kittle, because I love my guy Kittle. But
he is right now better than Kittle.
I think so, too. He's a better overall player.
But yeah, he's better right now.
And he's better on the underneath stuff.
Remember, Kittle's young, man.
I know he is.
And
I know he is.
Well, the difference between them is Kelce does the physical underneath tight end things better than Kittle.
Yes.
Kittle's faster. The breakaway speed and ability, he gets more distance between him and defenders before he gets the ball, which I think might be Shanahan as much as anything.
Agreed. A lot of misdirection.
But I'm not sure he posts up quite the way Kelce does. I think that's just practice,
though. That 7 yard out. On third and seven, third and six.
I don't know how you stop it.
I mean, he's just unstoppable. And then when they do the deep drags or the little smoke screens to Tyreek Hill and all the different wide receivers they have. Conley, that guy makes plays too for Kansas City.
The creativity, the diversity of that offense. These are just two fantastic football games. And before we switch back to Warriors, I want to quickly get your thoughts on the NFC game.
Okay.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Robert Mays. If I make you pick a coach between Peyton and McVay.
I'm taking Peyton strictly because of the body of work.
And I think that's why I would take the Saints in this game.
Yeah, and I also, man, I just know that building in the playoffs, any game, but that game, that building in the playoffs is so hard. We saw Brett Favre, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, crumble late in the game, making a terrible decision. Favre made a lot of terrible decisions from the pocket, but my point being is Jared Goff has never played meaningful playoff games like this. College, high school, in the pros. This is the biggest game of his career. McVay also hasn't had a lot of week after week playoff preparations. And it's one thing to win that first game after a week off. I'm interested to see, can they slow down C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley? Who would have thought C.J. Anderson would be eating like he did?
Did you see his explanation for the weight?
I loved it. He's my guy, dude.
Pregnancy? He's putting on pregnancy weight?
Dude, do you know that he is the ultimate Bay Area guy?
Why?
Berkeley? He grew up in Vallejo.
Oh.
Went to Laney College.
No kidding.
Went to Berkeley. Okay.
I did not know he was a Laney College.
Yeah.
Played for the Raiders.
State champs.
I don't know if he played for the Raiders.
Well, you know,
did
the
he
thing
even
is,
get a touch?
Anybody could have had him. And it's the right circumstance, the right situation, being behind that offensive line.
My favorite thing about him.
That was awesome. And rubbing the belly.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
I'm stealing this from somebody, and I can't remember who. It might have been Mina Kimes.
Right, plagiarize
it. Somebody made this point, and I agree from seeing him on and then talk about it afterwards off the field, that someone made the point they've never seen somebody who was so sure the league gave up on him when he still had something left, but also so understanding about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was literally like, Yeah, I mean, I knew I was still good and nobody seemed to care. And like, I was kind of okay with it, but I am glad I got the opportunity. And you're like, wow, man, that's a really worldly
perspective.
Yeah, congratulations to you. I can't, I don't take that kind of even keel when people screw me over. I don't know. I don't know about you.
He's got an uncanny ability to juke with the feet. For a big dude, he's got great feet.
He still moves like he did 30 pounds ago. It's really impressive.
And, and don't forget, he was sneaky good in that Super Bowl. People forget.
He's had a sneaky good career.
Yes!
CJ Anderson has been a good
running back. That's a good way to put it.
To see him, though, come back at 30 pounds heavier and then have one of the best games of his career was pretty wild. He was better than Todd Gurley in that game.
Yeah. And you know who else showed up in that game? Who hasn't showed up much all year? The Domokong Su.
Yeah.
We know about Aaron Dobbs. That's another. That is, I'm telling you, I keep bringing this up. Tlaib and Peters versus Michael Thomas, who's just unguardable. He's unreal. And then that offensive line against Su and Dobbs. I hold Donald in such high regard. Matt, I've seen so many guys in their prime live, right? I've seen LT. I've seen Aaron Donald on every single play is blowing two guys up. It's unreal.
No, I mean, Donald and Mack right now are the two guys for me. In
I saw Mac in the Chicago game.
Well, on the defensive side of the ball.
That side.
And it's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and we said the same thing about DeMarcus Cousins. But with both Mac and Donald, they're the only defensive players right now for me where I would literally be not just content but thrilled if they just put a camera right on that one guy for the entire game.
Agreed.
Just watching that one guy for 60 minutes of football. And like I said, that's the same thing we said last night about DeMarcus Cousins. Like, in his return, I would have been perfectly happy if ESPN, on like ESPN The Ocho.
You need Warriors Raw.
Had just put a straight up Boogie solo cam feed to just watch him move around the court and watch every single thing he did. Donald Foyle, also with an eye on the big man last night, the former Warriors center on the current Warriors center. When we come back, Matt Kolsky, Joe Shasky, Ski Team on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
This is a little better, Gabe. It's a little better. But it's on us at this point.
Is there anything from this millennium? Anything in the library?
Or even just like an original non-Muzak version of a song, of any song, would be fine. I feel bad now because for us to bring in a man of a Donald Foyle's greatness with this tepid level of music is inappropriate. So we're gonna create some space between that song and a Donald Foyle, who joins us in just a couple of minutes.
We got to ask a Donald what's the last song he listened to. Find out what his musical tastes are.
Huh.
Yeah, I want to hear
it. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a very well-read person. You know that he got the Warriors to do book
Colgate
reading.
Graduate.
Yeah, he got the Warriors to do a bunch of book reading and stuff from his time. I was a big... He's the greatest number 31 in Warrior history.
Wow. Wow, bold statement.
It's facts. Factual.
Have you actually vetted that?
Well, Jason Caffey was on that list.
Love Jason Caffey.
Former
Bull.
Yes, very.
Big Caffey guy. I was a big Caffey guy.
After that, it goes real thin. Don't have a lot of depth of knowledge on 31s for the Warriors.
Yeah, I'm not good at the number game. Some sports dudes are just like, oh yeah, like 27. I know everyone who's ever worn 27 for my favorite baseball. I don't think I pay enough attention, maybe? I don't know what my problem is. It's hard for me to track that down.
That's all right.
Boogie Cousins fouling out last night. Let's start with that. A texter just asked, is it me or did it seem like amateur night officiating last night? It's not just you. It did seem like amateur night to me as well.
Seven fouls in 2 minutes to start the game?
Yeah.
Great flow.
It's bad. It's just bad. Are you worried about that part of DeMarcus Cousins? Like, does that concern you at all, the foul situation?
I am one of the few Warrior fans that does get irritated by what I call the unnecessary technicals.
Well, that's a different issue.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is like, at some point, I use the word discernment. There is a time and a place when to argue a foul. Klay Thompson, I think, is on one end of the spectrum. And then you've got Iggy and Draymond and all the other guys on the other side.
We're probably a happy medium somewhere.
Right? And that's all. And I'm just saying, like, at least if you're going to argue, let it be the one to die on the hill about. You know? Like, Draymond hanging on the rim last night. Okay, whatever. I'm not even – it was a big play. I liked it. Good for him. You know, glad he could dunk again.
Hey, just don't worry about it, man. Draymond, right now, not the team leader in technicals. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here.
Is it Durant?
It's all good. It is KD.
What's the number at?
I think it's 8 or 9. I now we welcome a man who I am actually curious to know, since we're talking technicals. O'Donnell, did you ever get a technical in your NBA career? Every experience I've had with you suggests you're far too nice for that.
Well, there was that one.
Everybody has the one time they lost it, I suppose.
Exactly. There was that one.
We also wanted to know, we were talking before we brought you in about the terrible music our producer's been playing for us all day. And Joe was curious, what's the last song you listened to? What's your music taste like?
You know, it's always Jimmy Cliff.
Okay, know, the island vibes.
Wow.
Well, you know, I'm Caribbean all the way.
Okay, that adds up. We should have guessed that.
I should have.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, O'Donnell, you were a great big man for the Warriors. You used to block shots at the rim. I was just a huge fan of yours. And I saw Boogie go to the rim with authority early in that game for the first bucket of his Warrior career. And I started to think to myself, we've never really had a down-low power element offensively like Boogie Cousins. I mean, what is that going to add to the rest of the firepower? We know we've got the three-point ball, but how does that really help balance things out for the other players on the team?
Well, I was probably jumping up more than anybody. I thought that was so important to play. I mean, the biggest thing for me coming in, well, one of the issues was really trying to decide what's going to be the combination between three-point shooting and going inside. And DeMarcus Cousins did a remarkable job of balancing that in his first game. But as to establishing the low post move, as you can see, as they get comfortable, Steph and everybody's going to get a lot of open threes because DeMarcus Cousins is demanding a double team down low. He's a load to handle, and he's an incredible passer out of the double team. So if you have a credible threat down in the box and you have that many great shooters, now they're going to have a little bit more time because he can hold a ball, he can score down low, he can pass it out, but he can bring that double team, which is going to open up the floor and create a lot of opportunities for all the other guys to shoot.
I think one of the things that people slept on a little bit of Donald, just because it's been so long since we've seen him on the floor, that I think people forgot to a certain extent just how damn big the guy is. I mean, he's huge out there. He's incredibly difficult to move. And I think some of the stuff people worried about in terms of defense and whether his athleticism or fitness would be problematic early, there will be a learning curve or a sort of rehab curve with some of that. But just the fact that they now have a man of his size when it comes to setting screens, when it comes to rebounding, things they've struggled with so far this year, he makes a huge difference just by being there, right?
Absolutely. And I think what we have to think about it is that when he's down there, and not everybody, you can't just send one person to guard him. You're going to have to send two people. And when he's in the bows, when he goes to the bows, you're going to have to send more than one person to kind of keep him off the glass. So, I mean, he is going to occupy a lot of people, which gives other players opportunity to get offensive rebounds as well. So I think that sometimes the guy who's down there doing the battling, he's not the one sometimes who gets the offensive rebound. Who gets the rebound is the other guys. But now you will see guys start going in and getting a little bit more, getting a freer path to the basket because he's commanding again, like he does offensively. He's commanding two people when he goes to the boards.
And stylistically, what did you think as far as the intangible effect on their joy, the Warriors team's joy? We've been dissecting their demeanor and how they interact amongst each other. I'm sensing a pep in their step, and to see the entire bench jump up after he threw that dunk down, they're almost like rejuvenated by his return because it's something different to focus on. Do you think I'm off base there?
I don't think you are. I mean, I think that's the most excitement we've seen on the bench. I think that in many ways, the Warriors was a little bit stale in some sense of like there is this inevitability about who they are, and they're not, they didn't have anything to focus on, and now they can take that off and just really be happy for a player that went through a devastating injury and is coming back, and he's obviously he's been in practice, he's been doing all the stuff that he needs to do to be ready for the season. But then as players, when you see that, you're joyful for him. So all the worries that you have dissipates a little bit, and now everything is kind of projected onto this player and to his joy and to his union into the team. So I think it was definitely true that they look a lot more lively and a lot more excited about what DeMarcus Cousins could bring. And I think it's a possibility of what he could bring to this organization.
And as he works his way back in, by the way, our guest, Donald Foyle, former Warrior big man, current Warrior pre- and post-game host on ABC. Obviously, last night, it's the Clippers. They get the Lakers on Monday. And I guess Zubac is a little bigger. But generally, these first few games, not a lot of challenges in the big man department that he specifically has to deal with. Is there somewhere on the schedule that you're looking at in terms of this is going to be the first real test for DeMarcus actually defending another big? Because I think that's the one thing we probably didn't get a chance to see any of last night.
So I'm a little bit different. I think what I'm worried about is that not that how he played last night. I think that you could see a little bit of still a little bit of hitch in his step, mm-hmm. a little bit. But so to me, it's today.
Right.
Like, how is he feeling today? And then how is he going to feel on Monday? So I think that the true test of his being back to form is going to be a few months down the road, because I think that it's a mental game. When you come back from an injury, you have to fight. The fatigue is going to be there, but it's the mental aspect of trusting that body part that has been hurt. And so he's going to go through that process, I think, for the next few weeks and really feel his way out. So I don't think for him, focusing on who's going to be the big guy that I have to demonstrate my prowess against, I don't think it's going to be like that. I think for him, it's going to be a day-to-day process of trying to make sure going into the postseason that he's at his best, not only athletically in terms of getting into the condition to play at the level that the Warriors play at, but it's also about trusting himself again. And whether he plays a guy tomorrow, we know he's strong. We know he can shoot the threes. We know what his skill set is. We know he has averaged as much as 25 points a game. So to me, what I'll be looking at is how he's going to stop. You know, like you see last night when he's running, he still has to be able to trust and really push off of that ankle and push off of that foot and really trust that. So to me, that's what I'll be looking at rather than worrying about the player you're gonna match up against, because I think right now that is not as important as him getting back in his mind and really start trusting himself again in the court.
O'Donnell, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant are having monster seasons, both right near 30 points a game in the top five of scoring. If you were coaching against them this week, I mean, what is your strategy? Do you try to take one of them away? Do you try to minimize what one does best? How would you play and how would you design your defense to slow down this dynamic duo?
Well, I think that the big thing is, and it's still one of the areas that we have to improve, is rebounding. So one of the things you want to do is that if you have an outside shooting team, you have to limit them, to one shot. So you want to make sure that whatever shot you give them is like, that's the one shot they're going to get, that they're not going to win the 50-50 ball. So you have to take away all of the other elements around them, and then you have to limit your turnovers. So to me, it's not so much stopping the Warriors as really taking away the things that make them great. So what makes the Warriors exceptional is the ability to run in the open floor and shoot the ball. So you have to limit your turnovers. You have to get rebounds. You have to prevent them, from getting out and running. So you want to slow the game down. You want to gum it down. You want to force them into one-on-one isolation rather than an emotion offense that they like to play and they're so deadly in. So to me, it's like if Steph Curry comes out and is shooting the ball at half court, there's really not much you could do.
Yeah.
So you have to focus on what your strengths are and really try to minimize you know, what they can do beyond the shooting. So you want to dive on the floor if you're the opposing team. You want to give Steph Curry a lane or take away something from him. I'm not saying you're going to stop him from shooting, but you maybe want to go on his hip and make him into a driver into the paint. So there are different things you can do. You can double at the point of the pick and blitz it, take the ball out of one of the guys in hand. But again, you have four or five other people who could do the same thing. So if you take away something from Steph, you're probably going to set off Clay. And if you take away something from Clay, you're going to set off KD. So I think it's a very difficult team. It's the reason why we have like six All-Stars on this team.
As it turns out, I think the best option, if you're confronted with the Golden State Warriors, the best option is to coach for them rather than against them, really, is what you're saying.
Indeed.
Donald Foyle, of course, beloved Warrior and current Warrior pre- and post-game host. We always appreciate your time, man. Thanks so much for hopping on.
Thank you for having me.
That is Donald. Truly a pleasure. And he's right. Like, what do you do? I, in particular, think of that one shot against the Pelicans where Steph came around a screen and they did blitz it.
Yeah.
And he shot it with two guys standing inches from him. He shot it from a successful double team and swish.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, I think the one thing that does work against the Warriors, bleed the clock down on offense. It's almost like ball control.
Memphis.
Yeah, not just that. Houston does it too.
Slow it down
yes.
And beat them up.
Exactly. And then get them into that pick and roll isolation game. And the way Harden plays, everyone could say whatever they want about stylistically, how much they hate it. He travels, blah, 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 blah. But he does have a lot of success. And his team, I know they didn't win a lot of games until the final year and a half or so against the Warriors. But if you look like bleeding the clock down every single time and limiting the amount of possessions, because the Warriors are going to turn the ball over, but they're so used to the pace and having more possessions that they kind of negate whatever turnovers they have.
Well, also just think about
that. That way works.
We talk a lot about sample size, right?
Yes.
And I don't know that people always know exactly what we're talking about, but the general point of the discussion is that it's like when you roll a die. When you roll a die,
multiple dice,
there's six potential outcomes, right? And in a perfect world, each of those six outcomes will come up an even number of times because no one side of a die is more likely to come up than the other. The more times you roll the die, the more the actual results look like the theoretical results. That's what sample size is about. The Warriors are the best team in the league. So the bigger sample they have, the more difficult it is to beat them. Overwhelmingly, yes. If you play more and more and more possessions, more often than not, the Warriors will win each of those possessions, which means the more possessions there are, the more likely they are to beat you. If you're going to increase your chances of beating a team that's better than you, it's the same strategy in football. Take the air out of the ball, slow it down, reduce possessions, keep yourself in touch.
Yes.
And the thing that the Rockets and a handful of other teams do have is if they're in a nip and tuck close game down the stretch, James Harden is every bit as likely to tear your heart out as Steph Curry or Kevin Durant is.
Like he did on that side inbounds when you had two guys in his face and he still drilled that shot and then turned and started barking at Draymond. The other guy that's missing for them right now, and I'm assuming he's going to be healthy for the playoffs, but Clint Capella,
yeah.
I really underrated how good he's become. And, you know, all he does is dunk. Yeah, but he's really good. He's got great hands. He defends at the rim. Like, he's really good at that skill.
We talked about this when we were talking about before the show. This is a little insight into our pre-show meeting. We talked about Brady versus Montana
yes.
and how crazy it is that people downgrade Brady for making it to more Super Bowls, which
yes.
he then lost, because you're basically giving Joe Montana credit for losing earlier.
Yes.
It's a similar thing with this dunk criticism.
Oh, my God.
Like, when people are like, oh, Ben Simmons is not that good. All he does is dunk. Yeah, but he manages to dunk it like 15 times a game, and that's all he knows how to do.
Absolutely.
Like, you should be impressed. Same thing with Clint Capella. It's like, well, how impressive is 65% shooting if all he's doing is dunking? Yes, dunks are easier, but that means He's getting a bunch of dunks every game. Yeah. That's because he's doing something right.
Watch the games. He sets great screens. He's got great feet. His hands are really, really good. And here's the thing that no one ever talks about. His conditioning.
Yep.
He gets up and down the court all game.
That's a great point.
He's never tired. I'm blown away at his athleticism.
Adams is similar in that respect.
That's a good call. He doesn't huff and puff.
Right, and he's not the same raw athlete of Capella.
That's a good point.
But he's tireless.
Yes. That is a skill all in itself, especially in a cardio sport like basketball.
Especially for big guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I do want to see when they play Houston and they run that high pick and roll with Capella and Harden. Can Boogie backpedal? Can he jump out on Harden when need be? Because that is one element of Kevon Looney's game he does a really, really good job of, but it's hard for him to go up against Capella because Capella's just simply a better athlete and bigger.
Jumps right over.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the test Boogie still needs to pass. Here's what I would say about what we saw last night. The criticism of Boogie's defense traditionally has largely been effort, focus, positioning.
Mm-hmm.
I thought last night he was in the right spots. He was focused. He was playing defense the right way. And neither in his defense nor to criticize him, when Draymond Green's behind you telling you where to be, it's a little easier than when you're standing behind like Costa Kufis. So I get it.
You just sideswiped Costas for no reason.
That's true. There was I apologize to the Kufis family.
That's
no,
my move.
No I need for that. That's rude. My only point is he's a piece of a defense orchestrated by great defenders now, which should help. But playing exactly the way he did last night, he got murdered by Clint Capella. Because the one place where you could see he was in trouble was he was in the right position to switch, and then people drove right past him because he just doesn't have the lateral movement, the footwork. It's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
I do think that will improve as the year goes on. How much? I don't know, but that's precisely why Kevon Looney is still an important luxury to have.
How nice was it to see him come off the bench?
He's going to murder second units.
It's great, isn't it?
He's going to murder second units on the glass. And Kevon Looney is the essence of a professional. He just does everything he should do and nothing he shouldn't. It's excellent.
And then off the court, this is something no one's talked about this
year. Off the court, I one time saw him at Rudy's Can't Fail Diner in Emeryville.
Oh, okay.
That's my only off-court.
I was going to say contractually, as far as like, he kind of like bet on the situation, not just himself. He was like, you know what? This is the best situation for me to thrive and have a 10 to 12 year NBA career. If I play here, I can get a much bigger deal. If he were to, let's say, jump ship like McCaw has, maybe he bounces around at multiple spots. I mean,
the perfect comparison.
Would you agree?
They're in such similar situations.
Yes.
Young guys who were drafted late in the first round. McCaw may have been his.
I think
they paid to get a first rounder to pick McCaw.
I thought it was early
maybe
second.
It was early second. Either way,
regardless,
guys drafted relatively low.
Yes.
Who showed signs of having some potential, but also overwhelmingly didn't get a ton of opportunity and at times looked like they had nothing going for them. Up and down first couple of years. And when it came to the offseason, Kevon Looney said, I could go make a little more somewhere else, or I could be in this incredible situation and play my backup minutes and do my thing. And as it turned out, injuries led to him playing a lot more minutes.
Exactly.
That's what would have happened with Pat McCaw.
I've been saying that the whole time. People, he needs minutes and a couple extra million. Like, you're not going to be under the scrutiny playing way off the bench on this team, and you're going to get run. Blowouts.
Alphonso McKinney is playing more minutes for this Warriors team than Pat McCaw will for the Raptors.
That's a great, great point. And the other thing with McKinney, Draymond and him have that alley-oop coming in. And that is an element, because last year JaVale brought that lob. They had a lot of lobs and easy buckets to JaVale. And this year they're getting it with the second unit with Draymond and McKinney. And no one's talking about that lob play.
And I don't think near enough attention is paid to the level of rebounder that Alphonso McKinney
is. He's solid. I like him.
He's just awesome. The three-point shot has slipped. He's not knocking those down as consistently as he was earlier. But that's exactly right.
Like, come on.
It's a question of what do you need from that guy.
Exactly.
I need effort. I need defensive focus.
Some length.
And I need some finishing.
Yeah.
And he does all of that stuff. I love Alphonso McKinney. I maintain, and I think we're finally going to start to see it, This is the deepest version of this Warriors run. It's the deepest team of the run.
That's scary.
What McKinney does, what Jarebko does.
Cook got buckets last night.
Quinn Cook can score. Iguodala and Livingston haven't even really arrived yet. They're still in training camp for them. And now Boogie's here.
Now Boogie's here. This is incredible. When they flashed the starting five, and then everyone's like, oh, five All-Stars. They got another All-Star on the bench in Iguodala, who was the lead dog on his team and a max player for, what, 8 years in the league?
I don't think there's any question this is the best starting five in the history of the NBA.
Let that sit there.
I don't think there's any question.
Wow.
I don't know how you debate it.
Well, you said the NBA. The only other better starting five is the Dream Team starting five.
Right.
Yes.
You
right?
have to
Would
go to the
agree?
Dream Team.
Yeah.
Well, here's the easiest way to make the argument in my mind. Name me a fifth best player on a team that's even close to as good as DeMarcus Cousins.
There isn't.
It's never happened.
The only other team that had five really, 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 really good players and really know it was those Pistons teams, but they never had the superstar levels of Steph and Kevin Durant. They
Forget
were all
that.
Equal. You know what
Rip
I mean?
Hamilton can't carry
that's what I'm
DeMarcus
saying.
Cousins' jock.
Or Clay.
Period. End of story. Rip Hamilton. Rip Hamilton.
Ben Wallace.
Rip Hamilton would struggle to get minute one in today's NBA. Rip Hamilton is the best expression of an under-talented league you will ever see, and I will never forgive the Bulls for signing him for that two-year stretch. I'm scandalized.
What about the, we'll go with the Lakers with old man Karl Malone, Gary Payton, Shaq, Kobe, and was it D-Fish?
We're not talking about this. This is clearly the greatest starting Devin five
George.
Of all time. We're
Devin
not talking
George
about
George is
these
the
other.
Greatest small forward
we are
ever.
Never Devin George. Rip Hamilton.
I did like that
I'm
first.
Disgusted. You know what, though? I want to hear from you
okay.
about something you threatened me with before the show.
Uh-oh.
Before the show, you told me you got big baseball thoughts.
Good call.
You told me there may be big things afoot in the world of Major League Baseball. I assume you're not talking about the Giants because they don't seem interested in doing anything. We'll get into that as well. Little baseball chatter. Joe Shasky's theories coming up next. It's a ski team on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Finally.
Suddenly, we're very young and hip.
Finally, we got something from this millennium.
415 Texter said the closest starting five to the Dubs in all-around talent was the 86 Celtics.
Okay.
Which is fine, but again...
The Chief.
But let's just be serious.
Larry Legend.
There are three players okay. in that Celtics starting five who are worse than all five Warriors. I'm sorry. DJ, Ainge, Parrish, none of them are better than Draymond or Boogie. Or Clay.
I was going to bring up the Spurs when they had Robinson, Duncan, and Sean Elliott.
And who else started on
no,
that team?
No, I know. That's I mean
Avery Johnson. Like, yeah. There's never been a starting five.
It's
there
not,
just hasn't.
It's not
never
the Philadelphia
happened.
76ers with Eric Snow and Allen Iverson, George McLeod.
Yeah, like, there are arguments to
George
be made
Lynch.
About like the oh yeah it was Lynch not McLeod.
Yeah.
The overall value of a starting five if we talk about the ones that had Jordan and your argument as well Jordan was so much better than any
yeah.
of these
yeah
that's different
yeah.
but in terms of 1 through 5 it's just that nothing holds a candle to what we saw for the first time last night and hopefully we'll see many many times again throughout the rest of the season.
2001 Warriors.
A little more on that when Dieter Kurtenbach joins us at the top of the hour. We're going to get into all the Bay Area sports with Dieter, a columnist for the Mercury News, the Bay Area News Group. But before the show, you told me baseball might have some real drama coming down the pike and I want to hear what you're talking about.
Well, as much as I really want to go through the 2001 Warriors roster, that is the greatest assembled loser roster of all time.
Please, let's not.
Yeah.
Bobby Sura?
Yeah, Chucky Brown, Corey Oof. Blunt. There's a lot of great names on
oh,
that team.
Oh, the great Corey Blunt.
Vinny Del Negro, second
wow.
time around. Yeah, Vinny G. All right, so baseball is in a very weird predicament right now. I was talking to one of my buddies. I will dub him Minor League Matt because he spent a significant portion of his time playing baseball in the minor leagues for the Washington Nationals organization. And he talks to all his friends that are still obviously pursuing the profession, guys that are in the big leagues and whatnot. And he called me the other day and he said, Joe, do you realize how bad this offseason has been for the players union? Do you understand how bad this is for the game? I said, what are you talking about? He goes, 190 some odd marquee free agents in baseball are unsigned. We are like 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting.
Yeah, and not just 190 actual guys with value, but the two biggest names on the market.
So I said to him, I said, you know, in my lifetime, Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez are probably, and later, Roger Clemens, the most coveted free agents to hit the market at an ideal age. You know what I mean?
Okay.
When we go back to Barry, he was still in his prime,
yep.
25, 26 years old, whatever it was. The Giants signed him to, at the time, a very lucrative
huge
deal. 10, 11 years ago, Alex Rodriguez got a 10-year deal. Okay, he was older than Bryce Harper is now, and he made $250 million on that deal.
He was also better.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And he was a gold glove shortstop and everything. Yep. So you're telling me 10, 12, 15 years later, with inflation being what it is, with all of the salaries rising across sports
and
revenue streams rising.
They keep telling us how much money they're making.
Exactly.
Revenue keeps going up. Bud Selig grew the game.
Local,
sure he did.
Local TV revenue deals are highest they've ever been.
Right.
All of that. You're telling me both Machado and Harper are going to sign for half of what Alex Rodriguez got? Like, that's unbelievable. We saw last year where J.D. Martinez, who, yeah, he was older than these two guys. So you're not buying out the four prime years of their career and then into the 30s. Like, he was an older player, but he sat there and sat there and sat there and got a quote-unquote steal seven-year, $120, $130 million deal. Well, you're seeing it again this year. This is now the third or fourth consecutive offseason where spending by not just one team, the Yankees or, you know, the big boys, the Red Sox, everybody. Spending across the game is down. Add on to that the devaluing of starting pitching because people don't want to dump $100 million into a starter, and they're realizing through metrics and things, hey, we can do the opener. So now you're devaluing it even more. You're just not seeing anyone get paid. And it's a huge, huge problem. And his theory was baseball is going to have a strike in the very near future. The very near future. And it's because the players' union is getting screwed by the ownership. And I know people hate to hear, oh, these guys make so much money and this. I mean, like, if Bryce Harper's not going to get $250, $300, who is, Matt?
Yes, and it's fair for a normal human being sitting at home to say, why should I be upset that a guy who's already made $20 million is going to make $150 instead of $250? And that's fair.
Agreed.
I understand your position. What baffles me about these situations is how willing people are to side with a guy who's literally pulling in billions.
They side with ownership and management when in their own careers, they wouldn't side with management.
Never. And no one is arguing, at least I don't think, anyone would argue that based on what the job is, baseball players overall get a bum deal. No one's saying that.
No.
Okay?
No.
No one's saying, gosh, salary makes being a professional athlete awful tough. That's not the point here. But it's very bizarre to me that people like to throw those sorts of lines at athletes, but not at ownership.
Yes.
When in fact, if what you're saying is real, and I think it is, that ownership is essentially colluding. I mean,
it's creating a cap without creating a cap.
Exactly. It's they more or less, and it doesn't mean they sent emails about it, but
yeah,
behind the scenes have more or less agreed, we're just not going to go to a certain,
yes,
point with these guys. That's, first of all, illegal. And second of all, the exact sort of thing that causes a union to strike. Now, by no means do I think they're doing it with any sort of positive feeling in mind. By no means do I think
there's a memo going out.
No, and I don't think there's any sort of altruistic intention here. However, I will make the point that baseball, while local revenue has grown, is the demographics of the sport are not great in terms of the fandom. It suggests that the fan group is aging. And they're not getting a lot of new young fans.
Young people aren't into baseball like they used to be.
There's that. And just people nationally, there's not a national appetite for baseball like they used to. Locally, it's still very popular. Local TV deals, great. National TV, not drawing the way it used to. World Series, generally,
no.
slipping over
time. The top 48 out of 50 programs were NFL programs of all of television.
Right, exactly. And you know, NBA is ahead of baseball for the most part, I believe. So at some point, I mean, you look at what happened to hockey and the way hockey fell apart and lost an entire season is the interest went down, or I don't know if interest went down, but revenue stopped growing at the rate it had because they sort of hit the ceiling of their interest, and they continued to increase salaries until essentially their business model wasn't functional anymore, and they forced a lockout. We're not there with baseball, and by no means do I think the owners are artificially depressing salaries in some clever effort to avoid future disaster. I do think they may be avoiding future disaster as an unintended consequence, because ultimately, baseball is not growing at a rate that supports salaries growing at the rate they have over the last decade.
That is fair, but when you come out and I see a Chronicle article saying that Oracle has given the San Francisco Giants between $300 and $400 million over the life of this particular contract to just put the name Oracle on the stadium, I say, and you don't want to give $200 million to Bryce Harper if that's the asking? Like, how are you not into these discussions? It's, to me, it's an insult to me as a fan because I am the paying customer, okay? When I go to a movie, I don't care how much, you know, Charlie Sheen or, you know, who Tom Cruise, whomever the star is in the movie, I know what the ticket cost, how much popcorn is, the soda, and that's just the cost of doing business for me, the consumer, if I want to enjoy your entertainment. When I go to AT&T Park, I don't want to hear about you guys being broke when you're charging $20 for a craft beer and $12 for a hot dog. Like, all we want to know is, do you have fun, marketable superstars?
And also, when we've already accepted a system that artificially depresses salaries for years.
Yes. So this goes back to the Kyler thing, right?
That's right.
So we've been talking about Kyler Murray, and I brought this up to my buddy, Minor League Matt, and he said, look, here's the thing that no one talks about in baseball. Let's say he goes, any player gets drafted, let's say fast track to the big leagues, 2 years in the minors, okay? Now, if you stay in the big leagues, you have to stay in the big leagues for three full seasons.
Right.
Then you get year one in arbitration, year two in arbitration, year three. Then you hit free agency. You are looking at a projected time frame of 6 to 8 years before you can actually hit free agency. If you are one of the lucky who makes it through the 4, 5, 6 levels of minor leagues and cracks through and deserves this money. And clearly Bryce Harper and Machado were fast tracked through the system, came up. They're both 26, 27 years old. They're the most marketable players the game has today. And this goes back to the commissioner as far as Rob Manfred. This is why I wanted my man Larry Bear, even though I'm frustrated with Larry Bear on things with the Giants. He is great at one thing, and this is why he should have been the commissioner. He's brilliant at marketing. And boy, they need a marketing director to take over for baseball to make it more of a national sport like it used to be. You'll never be the way you were in the 80s and 90s, but be better than what you are now. If Mike Trout was walking down the street, all the kids I coach in basketball and baseball, they wouldn't even be able to point him out. But if Steph walked down the street, heck,
yeah,
if Jarebko walked down the street, they'd know who he is.
That's the real issue, is more people probably recognize, like, I don't know, DeMar DeRozan than Mike Trout. It's not Steph.
Yeah.
Of course, Steph and LeBron, but yeah, it goes much deeper than that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.